Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com. Recorded live from the lobby of the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Hey, everybody, it's Nikki Nellis. Live on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel. This is Industry Night. I want to thank you so much for joining me this evening. So for those of you who are tuning in for the very first time, Industry Night is a deep dive into some of the interesting culinary and food experiences that are out there in the DC metro area and beyond. Now, you may know me from the list, areyouonit.com. It's my online e-zine. Goes out to over 40,000 subscribers, and we cover every food and wine event going on in the DC metro area. So if you're here staying in the hotel and you're looking for something interesting to do outside of the fabulous hotel, because there is great things here, obviously, take a look at that. You can also hear me regularly on WTOP Radio and on my other show, Foodie and the Beast, which is live on Sundays on 1500. And of course, you should absolutely be following me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at NYCCINELLIS. Lots of great info there for fun and delicious ways to eat around the city. So this summer, I got asked to do something really interesting. I get asked to host a lot of panels. I get asked to judge a lot of contests, and I get asked to MC a lot of things. But Aviva Goldfarb called me, and she is a big foodie around town. She used to be the Scramble. Google it. Check it out. It was very cool. And it's still around, but she's not a part of it anymore. But the 6 o'clock scramble, my apologies. And she was involved with this panel about plant-based eating. And she was bringing together an incredible group of people that sounded amazing, and she asked me to MC it. And at the time, I was like, as a carnivore, I'm not really sure I should be the one MCing a whole panel about how plant-based eating is really going to be how we all eat eventually, or we have to eventually, because it's going to save the planet. And she was like, no, you're going to be the right person. Don't worry about it. And honestly, after doing that panel, I mean, I'm not going to say she was right, but she was right. I mean, it was an amazing panel of people, and two of the panelists are here today. First and foremost is Nicole Marquis. She is with Hip City Veg, and this is an incredible concept that she has come up with. It originated in Philadelphia. It is now here in DC. I'm going to let her explain it to you, but I also want to introduce Bruce Friedrich, who is in studio with us today. He's from the Good Food Institute, and both of these organizations are changing the way we as Americans and maybe beyond America and into the world eat. So Nicole, I want to start with you. Let's talk a little bit about Hip City Veg.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks mm-hmm. so much for having me. This
of course.
Is awesome. Bruce, love this.
Right.
Take two. This is awesome. So, yeah, started in 2012. We opened our first restaurant in Rittenhouse, Philadelphia, mm-hmm. right in Center City. And we were
but
slammed.
But what was your concept? I know. I know that. But not everybody who's listening knows. Like, what was your concept? What is Hip City Veg?
Yeah, I like to just like get straight to it.
I know, you're like, let's tell you the whole thing. Right. No, but what was it and what were you trying to do?
Right. So I came home from grad school. Mm-hmm. And I'll start there. You know, I moved in with my parents. Kind of a typical story. My father was in his 50s, you know, not too overweight, but he had like a belly. He was on 4 medications. He was diagnosed with high blood pressure. He had just been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, was taking insulin. And I had just read Dr. T. Colin Campbell's The China Study mm-hmm. and Eat to Live by Dr. Joel Fuhrman. And I was blown away by what I realized, that eating plant-based foods can dramatically affect our health in a positive way. And here I am living with my parents, and my dad and my mom both don't feel well, but they just think that's what happens when you get into your 50s. And my...
Hey.
Yeah.
Just to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I'm in my 50s.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Girl, so, you look good.
I'm just saying. I don't think I'm supposed to feel anything in my 50s. I think I'm supposed to feel fabulous. And like, I don't know why anybody would think anything else. Sorry. That's that's a total rant. Go ahead.
I love that. And that's mm-hmm. like an awesome state of mind. And, but I think that there's something that happens, you know, especially as we get older and we're eating processed or even just a standard American diet, mm-hmm. gaining a little weight, we're going to the doctor and now we have, okay, now we have high blood pressure. Now we have high cholesterol. Now right. My dad had type 2 diabetes. My mother had, you know, inflamed joints. She was coming, you know, arthritis. And mm-hmm. so I saw this knowing what I know about plant-based foods. And I said, Poppy, you need to change the way you eat. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, I have these diseases because my father had it. It's all genetic. And my dad's a nurse practitioner, which is not surprising because in the medical industry, they really have like six hours.
I mean,
yeah.
Like you know, almost no. You already know this. I mean, my father, my brother and his wife, they're all physicians right. and there's no nutrition class.
Right.
Right.
Well, because medical professionals, they're trained to prescribe medicine, you know,
right. they're trained to treat, not prevent.
Which is great in, mm-hmm. you know, when needed.
We're
but
on the same page.
I just knew that there was a better way. And
so
I gave,
how did Hip City Veg come to fruition?
So I gave my dad the China study. I made him a green smoothie, mm-hmm. the same one we sell today at Hip City Veg. And he was really surprised that he could have so much spinach so quickly. And like it was easy,
right.
you know, and he gave it a try. Within 2 months of adopting a plant-based diet, he lost 25 pounds.
Wow.
He got off safely, eliminated all 4 medications mm-hmm. and achieved normal blood pressure and was able to put his diabetes into remission for some time. This was magic.
Right.
So that's how Hip City Veg started.
Okay.
I have to make this food convenient, familiar. Number one, it has to taste good.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be appealing. I want to debunk all the myths that plant-based food is, you know, rabbit food or hippy dippy.
Just salads.
Yeah. And I came up with the idea for Hip City Veg.
Okay. So just a quick, what's being served at Hip City Veg for people that isn't just salads? What is it?
Yeah. So we just mainly focus on classic American menu items like burgers, shakes, and fries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our number one selling item is a crispy Hip City Ranch sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a battered, crispy veggie chicken sandwich. And, you know, I think it's a bestseller because people can go in, read the menu. They're like, yeah, I know what that is. Okay.
Right.
It
makes sense
to me. I'll give that a try. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And they love it. You know, it has it's the same flavors, the same texture. And then they pair that with an organic green smoothie, and it's one small step towards lowering their cholesterol intake.
Sure.
You know, opening a world of plant-based eating. And for so many people who never thought it was possible to really enjoy a plant-based mm-hmm. meal fully.
Well, so Bruce, let's talk about the Good Food Institute. How did this come together? Like, did I say anything?
Yeah. Well, I will start by saying that all of us at GFI, we now have an office just at the Farragut North Metro Station, and mm-hmm. Are huge fans of Hip City Veg, and just so excited to have you guys in Washington, D.C.
And I bet.
Mutual admiration.
Basically live there, so phenomenal. It's like a third of a mile from our office.
And, okay, perfect.
The food is so decadent and phenomenal. And the last thing you said, I think, is critically important, and that is that the food has to be good. And the food at Hip City Veg is fantastic. It's good for, you know, it's good for vegetarians and vegans, but much more importantly, if you're trying to make a positive difference in the world, it's also delicious and satisfies meat eaters. It is, it's comfort food and
right.
it's fantastic.
It's awesome. But let's talk Thank about, you. Now that we've gotten that plug out of the way, let's talk about what the Good Food Institute is and what you all are doing.
Sure. So the Good Food Institute is using markets and food technology to transform agriculture mm-hmm. away from the industrial use of animals. So
okay.
the Good Food Institute comes out of a brainstorm that meat is made up of lipids, aminos, minerals, and water. That is everything that constitutes meat. And we can do that with plants. We can make plant-based products that satisfy meat eaters. So Up until 10 years ago or so, there was an assumption that plant-based foods were for vegans and vegetarians. And if it's for vegans and vegetarians, they don't really have any other choice. So it doesn't have to taste that good.
No, I mean, I'm going to interrupt you just because I know from the chef world, I had a friend who grew up in India and she was vegetarian. I mean, that's how she grew up. I mean, she was virtually vegan. But when she went to restaurants and she was in the restaurant industry and she said, I'm vegetarian, I mean, everybody rolled their eyes. They were like, I guess she's having the carrots. I mean, you know, there was no thought process to how do I make a dish for her that's really delicious and satisfying.
Yeah.
But there's been a real change. And do you think the Good Food Institute has a lot to do with that?
Well, we've only been around for about 3.5 years.
Okay.
And our focus is really on how do we biomimic meat with plants, mm-hmm. and how do we grow meat directly from cells. So
okay.
We have 3 programmatic departments. We have a team of scientists who are focused on basically open sourcing the science of creating meat from plants, creating mm-hmm. plant-based meat that is indistinguishable from animal-based meat, except that it's made from plants. So the external costs go away. And then also, how do we grow meat directly from cells? So the quickest animal at mm-hmm. going from birth to slaughter is chicken. It takes 6 to 7 weeks to get a chicken to slaughter. Mm-hmm. If you grow the cells directly, you can get that same growth in 6 days. So it's just a much more efficient process.
It sounds a little Terminator-y. Do you know what I mean? Like, it sounds a little... Since it is a process, is it not processed food?
Well, it's significantly less processed than the way that meat is made today. So
okay.
if you visit a modern farm or visit a modern slaughterhouse and see mm-hmm. all of the things that happen on farms and in slaughterhouses, and you see the chlorine baths and the bacterial contamination...
I'm going to interrupt you for a second, because you're talking big ag specific, right? Because do you feel the same way about these small, little farmers?
Well, that is literally less than 0.1%
okay.
of meat sales. So
mm-hmm.
literally one thousandth of
okay.
Of meat sales is the Joel Salatin Polyface Farms.
Okay.
And we encourage people even to go visit that. So, and you can actually watch online. You can go to YouTube and punch in Polyface Farms, which is mm-hmm. the farm that Michael Pollan made famous
right.
by writing about it in Omnivore's Dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
So punch in Polyface Farms, chicken slaughter, and watch Joel slaughtering chickens and see if that's something that that you're comfortable with.
Right.
And even that is particularly unappealing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the great things about creating meat from plants or growing meat directly from cells is they will be streaming the process live on the internet. Now, it will get boring in about 10 seconds, but they're literally passing laws to make it illegal to see what happens on modern farms and in modern slaughterhouses. And
right.
with the plant-based and the cultivated methods of producing meat, there's absolutely nothing that will turn anybody's stomach or that they'll find untoward.
So what is it? Can you explain it? Because, I mean, I just had another group of people in here and I was telling them what we were going to be talking about. And the gentleman said to me, he's like, I don't understand heme. I don't understand what that is. And what else are they, if it's all plant-based, but it's from cells, he didn't understand it. And I was like, I can't explain it to you. I don't understand it either.
Well, heme is a different issue. So
okay.
heme is the ingredient in the Impossible Burger.
Right.
And it's a soy-based heme, although there's heme in all living things. So
mm-hmm.
there's heme in human beings. There's heme in soy. There's heme in lettuce, for that matter.
Right.
There's heme in everything. But so basically what Pat Brown, who is a tenured, he's emeritus professor at Stanford University, and he was a biochemistry professor at Stanford. He's actually the founder of the PLOS, the Public Library of Science. So
mm-hmm.
basically sort of creating science for the masses, and just an extraordinarily impressive human being. And circa 2009, he took his sabbatical and he wanted to figure out what he personally could do about climate change. He read the UN report that there's a UN report called Livestock's Long Shadow. And one of the things that this report says is that more climate change is attributable to animal agriculture than is attributable to all forms of transportation combined. So all of the trucks on the roads, all of the airplanes, all of the cars, animal agriculture causes more climate change than all of that.
Wow.
And shifting from eating meat to eating plants is a heck of a lot easier than never driving again or sure. never flying again. Like, this is something. And he basically decided, I want to make it easier for people. Mm-hmm. And people love the taste of meat. We have been telling people, you know, health experts have been telling people, environmentalists have been telling people, animal activists have been telling people, eat less meat every right. year, year after year after year after year, literally for decades.
It's going up.
And people are eating more meat. So right. Pat's brainstorm and another guy, Ethan Brown, no relation to Pat Brown from Beyond Meat, mm-hmm. They had the idea, let's biomimic meat with plants. Let's give meat eaters everything that they like about meat, but let's do it with plants. And okay. that's similar to the GFI thesis. And we have a team
so
of people.
So do you work with them?
We do, yeah.
Okay. So how is it that you're working with them and what... Let's talk about what their product is and what they're putting out there.
So I'll say that our primary focus is open sourcing the science here. So our primary purpose is to create competitors for okay. them. So we do work with them. We work with them on the policy front. We work with them on corporate engagement. They very graciously sponsor events that we put together. So, I mean, both Pat Brown and Ethan Brown are in this for the right reasons. They mm-hmm. want to transform animal agriculture. And one of the things that I love about both of them is that when you ask them, how do you feel about Beyond Meat or how do you feel about Impossible? And like the media will try to set them up as competitors for one another. And they're both like, you know, we are less than 1% of the meat market. Right. We are not competing with one another for that 1%. We are competing with the entire meat industry for that 99%. So they are like super gracious in helping us to open source the science of plant-based meat. And also to create a new industry focused on cultivated meat, growing meat directly from cells.
Well, so in creating a new industry, given that you're based in Washington, D.C., I assume you have to be up on the Hill quite a bit. I mean, what are the laws behind it? And is the meat industry shaking in their boots a little bit? Are they trying to create laws to make it difficult?
So it's pretty interesting. And so GFI has...
I know, that's why I asked the question.
but it's more interesting than I think most people would expect. So GFI okay. has three programmatic departments. We have a science and technology department.
You. When you say GFI, you mean the Good Food Institute. I just want everybody to know what we're talking about.
So
go ahead.
The Good Food Institute has three programmatic departments. Science and technology, which is what we've been talking about a little bit. Corporate engagement. And the big goal of corporate engagement is to help the massive food industry, and including the massive meat industry, mm-hmm. to see plant-based and cultivated meat as opportunity rather than as threat. This is what meat is going to be in the future. And who better to make a plant-based or a cultivated chicken than Tyson Foods? Who better to make a plant-based or a cultivated pork product than Hormel? So sure. that's a big part of our focus.
And are they... hearing you?
They are totally hearing
because,
us.
Because, I mean, I'm thinking in my head, I mean, listen, Hip City Veg is doing wonderful, wonderful things. But, you know, Burger King is carrying the Impossible Burger, right?
They are.
They're carrying the Impossible Burger.
The Impossible Whopper.
And Dunkin' Donuts is carrying something like...
Beyond Meat.
Right? So, clearly, somebody's listening. Why do you think there's that turn so quickly?
Well, nobody goes... to work at Tyson Foods or Hormel or Smithfield or any of these companies. Nobody goes there because they are excited about the climate impact of the meat industry. Nobody
right.
goes there because they're excited about factory farms and slaughterhouses. Like, their goal is noble. They want to feed as many people as possible high quality protein as profitably as possible. It's mm-hmm. like straight capitalism in food. And it's, you know, better than a lot of companies in that what they want to do is feed people, and they want to feed lots of people, and you know, it's capitalism, so they want to turn a profit. But the inefficiency of growing massive amounts of crops to feed them to animals so that we can eat animals.
Instead of just growing the crops.
Exactly. Makes it inescapable that feeding the cells directly mm-hmm. Or turning those crops into plant-based meat is going to be significantly less expensive as it scales up. So it's going to be more profitable. So it's better for the environment. It's better for the global poor. It's better for global health. It's better for animals. And it's more profitable. And that's the message that we bring to those companies.
But let's talk about... You said something very specific, the global poor. You know, in the States especially, you know, if there's not a meat of some kind on the plate, it's not a meal. So while I hear you when you say, oh, it's easy because, you know, not easy, but, you know, it's we don't want to get rid of our cars and our planes and our transportation because we need that and we don't need meat. But culturally, we eat meat. So how do we engage with people as a way to change that thought process?
Well, we don't have to change the thought process. People eat meat despite how it's produced. They don't eat meat because of how it's produced. That's mm-hmm. why the Impossible Whopper Burger King had its most profitable quarter in like a decade once mm-hmm. they introduced the Impossible Whopper. Like Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat, they're not asking people not to eat burgers. They're just asking them to eat burgers. They give them the sit, they give them the taste, the texture, everything that they like about meat,
right.
but without all of the external costs and mm-hmm. without having to kill an animal. And there will be some people who actually want to eat, you know, they want to eat animal meat. And that's where you've got cultivated meat. You've got companies like Memphis Meats and Blue Nalu and all of these companies who are focused on growing meat directly from cells. And people
Wait,
like
what?
Well, growing meat. So it's basically using
that. That sounds gross.
You know, it's interesting. Right now, when
I mean, I know that sounded really juvenile, but like my initial reaction was plant-based. I totally get that speaks to me, but like growing it, I don't know that one. Throws me for a loop.
See, I know it throws some people for a loop, but I think if I asked the average meat eater, hey, would you like to eat a chicken? Would you eat chicken where the animal has been genetically bred to grow 6 to 7 times as quickly as they would naturally, and they're going to have their throat slit open while they're still conscious? And roughly 100% of people are going to say no.
No, right.
And yet 100% of people who eat chicken are doing exactly that.
Okay.
So I will say that the early polling on cultivated meat nets you anywhere from 30 to 70% of people saying that they would be likely to switch.
So what is it? What is it? How is it put together?
So it's the exact same process that tissue engineers use for therapeutics right now. So you take a biopsy the size of a sesame seed from a chicken or a cow or whatever animal, so a tiny little biopsy, and then you put those cells into what basically looks like a beer fermenter, mm-hmm. and you bathe the cells in nutrients, and the cells multiply and grow. And again, it takes, you know, chicken is the quickest animal at turning an animal into meat at harvesting. It takes 6 to 7 weeks okay. to get a chicken from hatching to slaughter. Uh-huh. You can get that same growth if you're using essentially a, you know, it looks like a meat brewery, essentially. It's cultivators, and the cultivators look like fermenters. Like,
what is it? What is the finished product?
It looks like
I'm
whatever.
I'm picturing like chickens without heads. Like,
No.
What does it look like?
No, you're just I mean, right now, the easiest thing to grow is like chicken nuggets or hamburger, that sort of thing.
So wait, you're and growing the actual product?
Yeah, you're growing the cells. So like if you're eating a chicken nugget.
Oh, so in the shape. Okay, got
yeah,
it.
You're eating a
I've caught up.
Yeah, if you're eating a chicken nugget, you're eating a collection of cells. If you're okay. eating a hamburger, you're eating a collection of cells. So this is just a far more efficient way of creating that collection of cells, but it doesn't require antibiotics. It doesn't have, so like Nicholas Kristof from the New York Times was writing about the studies that they've done into chicken. They're finding Benadryl, they're finding Prozac, they're finding dioxin, they're finding all of these drugs, they're finding all kinds of antibiotics in close to 100% of chicken samples. All of that goes away. We also have tens of millions of people getting sick every single year from contaminated meat.
Right.
We have tens of thousands in hospitalized.
So
we have more than 1,000 who die. All of that goes away.
Would this, it would alleviate food contamination?
Not 100% of food contamination,
because
some of it but is pretty darn close to one. Yeah, exactly. If you're processing, you're bringing people in. But all of the food contamination that has to do with the intestinal tract of animals, there's mm-hmm. no intestinal tract of animals. So the vast majority of that goes away.
Okay.
All of the drug contamination goes away. Absolutely no need for antibiotics. And it's a far more efficient way of trying to feed the world. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation released a report earlier this year with the Institute of the Future. And they basically said this is one of the solutions to global poverty. This is how we feed 9.8 billion people by 2050. The current system isn't going to do it. It's just too inefficient.
Okay, so with that kind of support, are they financially supporting the growth of it? Because not only do you need people who can make it, you need people who can execute. Like, you have the science, now you need people to produce it, and then you need to be able to get it out there. So how does it go from the lab to the marketplace?
So a two-part answer, and the first part of the answer is yes. Bill and Melinda Gates are investors in Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat and Memphis Meats, which is
just
sort
spreading
of,
it out.
Exactly. Yeah. No. I mean, Bill Gates said this is the future of food.
Okay.
This is how we feed the world mm-hmm. without the adverse climate impact. This is it. And then, but the central brainstorm of the Good Food Institute is with companies like Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat and Memphis Meats, companies that the Gates are investing in. All of that science is protected by intellectual property laws. So our role is to say we need to create we need to tell everybody what we know. We need to tell everybody where we need more investigation. We need to advocate for governments to be funding this stuff in the same way that governments are funding open source science into renewable energy. We need to create a massive ecosystem that doesn't rely on a few entrepreneurs or a few private industry sort of huge corporations.
Right, money.
Yeah, exactly. We want to open source this science in the same way that solar and the range of clean energies and renewable energies have been open source. So that's a big part of our focus, both our policy department and our SciTech department.
And Nicole, I promise we're going to get to you. It takes me.
I'm fascinated.
Okay, so this takes me back to my question earlier. Is there a fight from Big Ag about this process? Are they going to try to create laws that's going to make these kind of products harder to bring to market?
There is some of that, and the thing that's fascinating about that, which is that like Tyson Foods and JBS,
right?
And
like
ADM,
you said, you're going to them and they're interested.
Those folks are in favor of this. It was funny because there's a group called. So there's the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and then there's a much smaller version of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association that I'd never heard of.
Okay.
And they have opposite views of this technology. The small one is opposed to it. The big one is basically supportive of it. So there are really just the cattle industry is pushing back on this. So the big corporations are basically supportive. GFI has a conference every year, thegoodfoodconference.com, and we have all of the major meat industry corporations are there. Big food is there, and they see this as something that if it's going to happen, they need to dominate it. But there are some, you know, the American Farmers Bureau, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, there is some pushback. But this is inevitable. This is small business. This is capitalism.
We've got
the left to the right supportive of sort of our position policy-wise on this stuff.
So the question is, the next question, the obvious question is, are the farmers, these cattle farmers, poultry farmers, etc., are they able to transition, be trained and transition into other jobs in this field?
That is certainly something that we are supportive of. I mean, I will just say that you read a book like The Meat Racket, which is all about what poultry farming looks like today. Mm-hmm. Poultry farming is not a great profession for people other than, you know, the likes of Joel Salatin, which again is less than 0.1% of poultry farming. So cattle ranching is pretty much the only industry in animal agriculture where the workers are actually leading good lives and making reasonable livings. The average age of the cattle farmer is over 60 today. So basically our expectation is that cattle farming, I mean, that the plant-based and the cultivated meat industries are focused on lowest common denominator meat. They're focused on the meat where the animals are treated badly, the environment is treated badly, all of the stuff that we've been talking about. For people, the Alice Waters of the world, the Michael Pollans of the world, the Joel Salatins of the world, like people pay more for meat from animals that are treated well and where the environment is considered. This isn't going to displace that. Like those people, and that might actually even grow a little bit. This is going to displace the lowest common denominator meat, the meat that people buy because it's delicious and it's reasonably priced.
Right.
And this will be the future of that because it's just a much more efficient way of creating those products.
And it's just as good. Nicole, so when you went to source your products for Hip City Veg, how did you do it? Where did you go to? I mean, after you, when you talk about your ranch chicken, like how did you decide what you were going to use and how were you going to sort of give the people what they want?
Yeah, great question. You know, almost 8 years ago now when we opened, it was slim pickings. We had, a veggie burger, which was like mashed beans and some veggies mashed together in a patty. Gardein was available, and Gardein is an excellent product, and we use that for our chicken patty. And they had just started really not too long before we opened. So that's an excellent product, and now we can choose between Impossible meats and Beyond Meat. So having it really was a weakness in our in the company structure, only having one product that we could rely on to make a menu item. So now having different products really has helped us.
So when you talk about your milkshakes, what are you using in the milkshakes?
We're using organic soy milk.
Okay.
Keeping it simple, and organic soy ice cream.
I just had a new dairy product non-dairy dairy product.
Oatly?
No, 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 not Oatly. No, it's Ripple. Science-based.
Is it Ripple?
Yes. What is it? Eclipse.
See, there's so many.
Oh, I know.
The founder of Eclipse is a GFI alum.
I know. Yeah. Right? So, it was fascinating. They were using it in ice cream, dairy-based, like, pastry products. It was fascinating. It was very good. And that's a science-based product as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, the one of the co-founders, Alon Steinhardt, worked at GFI for a while and left to start Eclipse when he got into Y Combinator.
And then isn't Seth Goldman's
son,
son is involved,
also,
right?
Yeah, I think they have, I don't know how many employees they have now, but Seth's son was like employee number 7 or something like that.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting. And then there's also the egg product, right?
Just egg.
Just egg.
Yeah.
And they also do
Just mayo.
Just mayo, right? So
just
these are
cookies.
All vegan.
They're also doing cultivated meat. There was a hilarious Daily Show piece just a couple of days ago.
Okay. I watched the Daily Show. I missed it.
Okay. Well,
I'll look it up.
Yeah, if you go to Facebook page.
With Roy Wood Jr.
Yep,
yes,
exactly.
It's very funny. It was very, very funny. Yeah, no, I mean, I know all these products are out there, but I think, listen, there is an educated consumer who wants to know what they're putting in their bodies, right? And they assume if they're eating, you know, here at the Line Hotel and they're eating upstairs at a Rake's Progress and they're paying that kind of money, that they are having products that are sourced from careful farms and people who care about the environment and the product that they're serving. But I know that the general public can't always afford those things and can't always, you know, be able to put those kinds of priorities before they put something
on
their plate.
It's also just generally not true. I mean, you know, if you read the menu and you ask your server, you know, where is this farm? Even at expensive restaurants, more often than not, they have no idea. You're paying for a phenomenal chef, not for good animal treatment in the vast majority of instances.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think that
I'm going to fight you a little bit on that one. I mean, I work with a ton of chefs in the city. I don't think that's entirely true. Not all of them. But those that say that they're working with specific farms and are conscious, they're not bullshitting. They mean
no,
it.
Yeah, no, that was the point of my ask. Ask if they know where the farm is, and then go and investigate the farm. Like, know your farmer, I think, is something that everybody can agree with.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Yeah, Nicole?
Yeah, I just, you know, for me, when I realized that fantasy of a cow on a field grazing and being petted by the farmer and enjoying its entire life and that idea that I had my entire childhood about where my milk came from, once that fantasy was sort of like, that bubble was burst.
You were like, good, I'm out.
Yeah, I realized that might happen in some far remote place, but the majority of us are getting our dairy, our meat from factory farming. Mm-hmm. And it's a much different story, even on smaller scales. I mean, you know, there's no federal regulation on how to treat animals in farms.
Right. Well, and there's even going to be less regulation.
And two, two other quick points. The first one is there really is no moral difference between eating a cat or a chicken, a dog or a pig. So most listeners would never eat a dog or a cat. And just challenge yourself. Why would you eat a chicken or a pig but not a dog or a cat? What's the difference? And then the second one, you know, Joel Salatin basically does it as well as it can be done. And he still has to ship his pigs and his cows many, many miles through whatever weather extremes to slaughterhouses that he doesn't like. He doesn't like the slaughterhouses that they go to. So why pay somebody to do that? And then as I mentioned, Google and watch what the chicken slaughter at Joel's farm at Polyface looks like and ask yourself if that's something that you support. I think most people probably wouldn't.
Yeah, and you know, I find that it's such a hard conversation to have with people because food is so deeply personal and emotional and tied to so many family traditions and holidays and things. And so when I tried to preach, because that joke of, do you know when someone's vegan? Don't worry, they'll let you know.
Right.
You know, and it's like, that's how I was. When I first became vegan, I wanted to tell the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, wait a minute, this is really personal for people. What I need to do is make it so delicious that it doesn't matter that it's vegan or that it's plant-based. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people come in to our restaurants and they're like, well, what is it made out of? I don't understand. And before they can even finish talking, I'm putting a chicken nugget like in their mouth. I'm like, here, try this, you know, or giving them a sample of a green smoothie or whatever I can do. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, that's actually really good. And then they try it and it just opens a whole nother world. So making it, and you said this, Bruce, like making it taste good is paramount.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, but also educating people to understand what they're, I mean, they will eat it, but they're going to ask questions. It's not what they know. I mean, I hear what you're saying about cats and dogs and all that kind of stuff, but that information's been out there for a really long time, and it hasn't thwarted people. Do you know what I mean?
It has to be both, right? So people are not going to change unless you make it easy for them. But
it has to be easy for them, and it has to be... They need a yellow brick road. They really do. Yeah. I think, you know, the general public needs a yellow brick road to be enticed to change their cultural habits, their daily habits, whatever it is. Food means a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Whether it's gathering around the table for Thanksgiving or, you know, having dinner with your family, there are traditions and things that people have done, and I think it scares them to know that it has to be replaced.
This is, I think, the central brainstorm of the Good Food Institute, and mm-hmm. that is just that we will give them everything that they like about meat, but we'll produce it from plants, or we will grow it directly from cells, and people don't have to think about the external cost. They don't have to think about cats and dogs and cows and chickens. Mm-hmm. They're just eating for the same reasons they've always eaten, because they want delicious and reasonably priced food, and that's what we're creating. That's what Impossible Foods is doing. That's what Beyond Meat is doing. That's what the cultivated meat companies are doing. That's what Nicole is doing with Hip City Veg.
Mm-hmm.
We're helping people to live in greater alignment with the ethical values that they already hold.
Right.
By making the alternatives awesome.
Excellent. Okay, Nicole, tell everybody where your Hip City Veggies are here in D.C.
Yeah.
And up on the coast.
Right, so in D.C., we just opened in DuPont Circle in mm-hmm. 1300 Connecticut.
Yay.
And we've been open for 3 years in Chinatown and Gallery Place mm-hmm. on 7th Street between G and H. We will open in March at the Navy Yard.
Excellent.
Capitol Riverfront. Yeah, so we're really excited.
Right. Very, very good. Okay, and tell people where they can find you online and on Instagram and all that fun stuff.
HipCityVeg.com. Mm-hmm. We have a new catering menu that just rolled out.
Fantastic.
Breakfast in D.C., so come check it out.
Excellent. Okay, and Bruce, for people who really want to know, I mean, you provided an immense amount of information here today at a rapid pace, which I greatly appreciate. Tell everybody where they can find you, please.
Well, that one's easier. It's just GFI for Good Food Institute, GFI.org online. And obviously, we're on all of the social media. Just punch in Good Food Institute and we'll pop right up.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I really want to thank you both for joining me today. This was a lively conversation. And I don't disagree with you, Bruce, that plant-based eating is the wave of the future. It's just going to take a while to get people 100% there. So I want to thank you, the listener, for joining us today on Industry Night on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel. Follow me at NYCCINELLIS on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter for all the news that's fit to print on the D.C. Food and wine scene. And next show, I'll be talking with Chef Brian Voltaggio. He's got a secret, and he's going to share it on air. So tune in then. Thanks so much for joining us today, and have a delicious week.